Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Josh, glad you're here, brother. We have a lot of background together. So everybody listening, Josh has been a good buddy of mine for a lot of years now. One of the first people I met when I moved to Nashville. So, and from day one, you definitely impacted me. I want all of our listeners to kind of hear your backstory. So if you could dive into that real quick, then I want to kind of go into the last like year or two, which eventually led to the book you're launching now. And I think our listeners will love that.
Yeah. So, you know, I practice functional medicine, have for years. And what got me into it was a health crisis in my family. I think for a lot of people, whether you're in the health industry or finance or real estate, you know, a lot of times we get into it because somebody impacts our life in a positive way and we want to help pass that on to others. And so for myself, seeing my mom go through the conventional medical system and lose her hair in chemotherapy, how sick she got, that made me say in my head, there's got to be another way, a better way. And so even from a very young age, I became very health conscious, which eventually led me into studying natural medicine, getting my degree. Later on, I ended up going to Johns Hopkins University, getting extra training there, more into the leadership. But I, you know, my mom was diagnosed with cancer again later on. We did an all natural approach. She was able to heal using, you know, through juicing and taking herbs like turmeric and reishi mushroom and a number of things. And so that eventually caused me to open up my clinic in Nashville, a functional medicine clinic. And we did everything from chiropractic to blood work analysis and you know, nutrition consultations, physical therapy, and really just saw amazing results. You know, people reversing conditions like type 2 diabetes, people losing a lot of weight, people reversing certain autoimmune conditions, hypothyroidism. And I really loved what I did. And I just continued to want to help more and more people. And so, you know, over the years, I started getting more business savvy, learning about how do I impact people in a greater way. That led me to start a newsletter, eventually a radio show, which then turned into a podcast and a health website that became eventually was getting 20 million unique visitors a month. So at one point it was the top number one natural health website out there. And so started pouring into that. And then as our business grew, it was kind of crazy, Sten, you know, like my business, and this wasn't my original intention. I got into functional medicine because, you know, I wanted to help people like my mom get healthy, but I also realized if I went online, I could help more people. And the business really grew. I think a big part was because I was so purpose-driven and mission-driven. You know, we went from, you know, losing money to 1 year to then 500,000, the next year, 2 million, the next year, 12 million, the next year, 50 million, the next year, almost 100 million. So it was over 5 years. We went from 500 to 100. I mean, it was a 20X or more in a really short period of time. And, you know, I think that We hit the Inc. 5000 list. We were the number one growing company in Tennessee. And I just say all that to say, like, there are just some really basic things that I started doing that really helped. I think the biggest thing I was really conscious of is the team makes all the difference in the world. So I always tell people, start with why. Number one, what is your why? And in any industry, whether you're, again, talking about finances, or I mentioned real estate, or money management, whatever it is, I still like it when I work with someone like yourself, like I still want to hear why you got into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always the most important lead, because when somebody hears a story, for instance, hey, I got into this because I wanted to help people's legacy, like help their kids and their kids. Mm-hmm. Like if you hear something like that, you think, well, you're in it for the right reasons. And that's such an important part of things, I think, is starting with that why and purpose. The second thing though is who, you know, who are the people that you're going to partner with in order to grow your business. So for me, I hired a mutual friend. I think the first time or one of the first few times we met up, I remember at Vanderbilt and played basketball, Evan Tardy, became my, he started off shipping supplements out of my garage, working in the mailroom, and eventually became our company president of that company. And, but I just started realizing, who you partner with is everything. I mean, if you have a C-level team member, and by the way, this is an employee, it also is your upline. If you're in an organization where there's poor leadership, it actually can restrict you a little bit sometimes, or the people next to you. So I think the more you can get around people that are also purpose and why driven, who do things with excellence, who are skilled, who have a high level of talent and want to grow, you'll grow with them. So I think that getting around the right who's is so important, because most people ask the question how before who. You want to ask who, ask who before how. Yeah. And so that's the second thing I think that's really critically important for people. And then the third is what's your product? Do you have a great product? So I always say why, who, what. Like Warren Buffett looks at this, right? Or anything he's investing in. He looks at the leadership first. And then he said the number two thing he looks at is it a great product? Yep. You know, can it be a blue ocean? I remember meeting someone over at, I'm trying to remember the realty company's name. Maybe it's Scout. But, they're talking about just dropping theirs to a flat fee real estate. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting, right? So doing things to be able to be unique, but also just create the best possible product. And the next thing is how, right? How do you do it? Having the systems in place, good financial acumen, good, whatever if there's an algorithm you're using or a way to determine what to invest, when, how, when to sell, and how to, but again, going back to systems are like the habits of a business. It's like, if we want to grow ourselves, you've got to have great habits. Well, the same for our business. And if your business has great habits, which are systems, well, then the chance of it scaling go way up. So that's the way I tend to think about things, is if I have those four things in place, it really can create some pretty quick growth. And so that's sort of a long story. That's not even necessarily what you asked me, but I was trying to think about your audience.
I want to unpack those for sure. So everybody listening, this is it's why, who, what, and how.
Yeah.
And so I'd say a great takeaway as you listen is like, what's a kind of an audit of your business in each of these four categories? But let's jump through these a little bit. Cause as you were explaining this to me, I'm thinking of the advisor experience, and there's a lack of awareness. And I know in your new book, you talk about this a little bit, that sometimes we're just happily ignorant. Like we don't even know what we're capable of. And so when you think about why, when I talk to a lot of advisors, even at live events with hundreds of them, most of us do not have a compelling reason on why we're in this business. The answer is usually, I want to help people retire happily. And it's very canned. And I believe everybody wants to be in this business to do good work and to make a good lifestyle for themselves. But like, how do you tap into, or how do you even know if you've tapped into the thing that's like awakening something beyond, I just want to make money?
Yeah. So the way that I think about this, there's a few things. One, sometimes you're just aware because maybe you had an experience. Or maybe someone in your life had an experience, but generally it's pretty basic. I think when we're talking, like if I would think about myself and my family and most people I know, people want more freedom. That's a huge thing. Yeah. So more freedom, and that financial freedom is huge. Mm-hmm. And so I think you need to think about who is your avatar, who is your demographic. And so I'll give you an example for myself, because we get really specific on this. In fact, I just did this for a whole branding exercise for a new business I'm starting. And there's this company, they're top of the line. I mean, they've done designs for, billion-dollar companies. And we went through a branding exercise together. And so we got really specific about my demographic. And we go through every detail. So for instance, my demographic right now is going to be older millennials. If I'm thinking about the nutrition space, older millennials, who it's crazy to think, but so older millennials are turning 40. So they're starting to age. So some of the women are starting to get, they're worried about some of the wrinkles, and some of the guys are getting some of the joint issues, and I can't, playing pickup basketball or whatever it is. So millennials are starting to age a little bit. And so my demographic is, let's say, a woman who is, 36 years old and their husband's 42, something like that. They're in that kind of late 30s, early 40s range. And they are conservative. And by the way, I'm not saying this is the only people I'm going to reach. I'm just saying this is my audience. But they tend to be conservatives. They tend to be Christians. They tend to shop at Whole Foods and Lululemon and own a Peloton, and they've got two or three kids, and they send them to a, you know, home, they either homeschool or they're trying to not send them to public school. They're trying to maybe have them go to a private school, and thinking about what they're interested in. The right, so we really nailed down like, okay, so what do you know, Jennifer and Dave, like, what do they want? What are those things? What are they concerned with? Now, with the financial space, a little, and let me go with the health space, that they want to look and feel younger. They want to start now so they can feel, look and feel younger when they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, they want to look like Jennifer Aniston, that woman does, yeah, when Jennifer Aniston's in her 60s. So it actually is kind of crazy to me, but millennials actually think this way more than baby boomers did, a lot more.
Okay.
So anyways, I think that if I'm going to the financial realm with this, I think the freedom and being able to paint a picture, a vision. Hey, yes, what I see for you is being able to be totally financially free when you turn 55 or 60 years old. And you can do everything. You can do anything you want. You could retire to Florida. You could take trips. You could work part-time. Imagine your ideal future. That's my goal for you, is to get, you know, get you to that point. The good news for myself is I'll be at that place at 50. And if you want to fast track it, let's talk about that. But I think generally speaking, if those people, like, I'm thinking about my parents, they did this when my dad was like 62 and my mom was 60. They retired down to Florida and they had freedom. You know, my dad works a little part-time, you know, maybe 20 hours a week still in his 70s. It's because he wants to, but it's total freedom. And they were able to pay for their kids to go to college. So they're able to do that. They were able to give more generously. So I think being able to paint a picture of a vision of here's how to do it. And one of the things I get into in my book, Think This, Not That, is I call this a process of visualization to realization. Mm. And if you can show people this, it's really compelling. Now, before visualization, there's actually one step, and it's prioritization. So you want to ask people and know a little bit about, okay, what is your demographic? What do they prioritize? Mm-hmm. Well, my demographic prioritizes their family, mm-hmm, maybe their faith. They prioritize their work-life balance, freedom. You know, so I know that those are priorities for them. And then after that, I cast a vision, as I just shared. Here's what your life can look like.
Yeah.
Well, then the third step is maybe you set some goals. And with that, you form out a strategy. Mm-hmm. And so in order to do this, it's, hey, this is how much we'll need to save at, you know, this is how much we can earn at a 8% growth rate or whatever, you know, whatever number you pick or show them. And so you have a strategy of showing them exactly how to reach the goal. And then it's plugging those into systems for themselves. Okay. We're going to automatically, I know you've done this for a friend of ours. So yeah. I've got one of our buddies who you set it up where he automatically has, you know, his finances like pulled out of his check and goes right into a bank account that, uh-huh, you know, then accrues interest, right? Or into investments that you invest for him. So all that being said, those systems are then in place. My point is that I think for me, I get really confident in, if I sit down with an advisor and they say, here's my why, mm-hmm, here's exactly what our, here's our who, here's what we're about, here's our team, here's where we're in the best in the world. And then you start getting into knowing them, right? Mm-hmm. And then from there, so just as much who as possible. And the next thing I think there is what? Here's our product, here's our philosophy. I think that's part of what the what is, the product. Right. Warren Buffett's all about value. Kathy Wood is all about growth. Right. So there's a difference in sort of those philosophies. Yeah. So sharing your philosophy. And then I think here's how we're going to do it. Here's what I, but those
I
are
feel some. Like there's, I think in the financial advisor space, there's a lot of weak whys. I think that's something I run across that like, they yeah, probably feel it. They just haven't really trained themselves to communicate it.
Yeah,
I feel like communication should be a superpower of any entrepreneur, any salesperson. Where I think, unfortunately, a lot of our space is say a bunch of average things longer and harder than anybody else, and eventually you'll get enough clients to be successful.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I'm going to out-communicate other people. I'm going to communicate in such an inspiring, compelling way that like people will just feel better, more confident around me, even if I'm offering the same thing as a lot of other advisors, which is kind of true. Like we all think we're a little different, but like to a client, they all hear the same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I read this article by Warren Buffett years ago, and here's what he said. He said, when I invest in companies, he said, there's three things I look for. And then the fourth thing is what I'm going to hit on with your point. But I think this is interesting too. He said, I look at number one, the company leadership is of the company. That's the most important thing. Number two, I look at the product. And number three, I look at the industry and the market. Is there room for growth for it? Is there, you know, and so, but then he said something else in the same interview. And he said, by the way, he said, the number one thing anybody could do in any industry, finances like I'm in, investing, he said, it could be real estate, it could be healthcare. He said, is communication. He said, there's no other skill you could develop that's more important for every job. Because he said, he was talking about the financial industry, which is so relevant here, of course. And he said, it's literally the difference between somebody making a five-figure salary and maybe even an eight-figure salary. It's wow. The biggest gap is communication.
Mm. Yeah. We spend a lot of time on kind of whiteboarding. Like, how do you take something complex and simplify it visually? So, I think in our space, there's a huge gap in how we use illustrations or general language. And what we're really hoping is that somebody just doesn't have another option, so they're just going to do it with us.
Yeah.
Instead of taking the ownership of, there's a chance that my ability to communicate is the only thing standing between them and what they want to accomplish.
Yeah.
And I think that's a heavy way to put it, but it's like, I think it's that important.
Yeah. I think people are visual too. I think if you can paint the picture visually as well, I think it's very helpful. But yeah, you know, one of the things I learned when I was in practice, I had a mentor who we would do a patient orientation. It was a longer orientation. It was about an hour long. Mm. And we would go through the problems today with the, you know, I would tell my story about my mom being saved from cancer and healing using natural approaches. I'd then go into the problem today with the current industry and how that's actually going to end up making people worse. Mm. And then I would go through and share, you know, a few main points and testimonials and examples. And my mentor always told me, he just said, you know, this 1 hour communication that you have with this person, it is, he said, it is by far the most important thing you'll ever do in impacting their life. Mm. It's a first impression, but more than that, it really is. Nobody's ever shared something like with this with them before. So we practiced it constantly, like getting better at this one talk. I probably did this one talk. I mean, it had to have been, I did it 3 days a week for 6 years. it was a lot. It was a lot of times. And so it's the same thing. It's like, you can build an entire, I asked Jordan Rubin, my business partner, you know, Jordan. So Jordan is, he founded a company called Garden of Life, which now it sold a few years ago for $1.7 billion. He co-founded Ancient Nutrition with me. And when I first asked Jordan, I said, hey, how did you build this company into a $1 billion company? Here's exactly what he told me. He said, I just told my story over and over and over again. That's it. Wow. He said, I just would tell this story, this, you know, this anywhere from I had my 5 minute story of it or my 50 minute story of it, but I told it over and over again. It's all I did. And that's how I built it to a $1 billion company.
Wow. Well, I love that.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the book a little bit. Think This, Not That. Love that title. If there was two things, I highlighted self-awareness. You have a chapter, yep, kind of a mindset shift on that. And then the opinions to principles. Would you unpack those two for us?
Yeah. Can I unpack three?
Yes.
Let me start with another one. Well, I want to unpack this one because I think this is a big one for a lot of people. It's around limiting beliefs and you overcoming yours and helping your clients overcome theirs.
Nice.
Because it's I mean, if anyone that's a good communicator as well, just as we were talking about this, you answer the questions before they ask them. Like your presentation be where, yeah, by the end, they don't like you know what they're going to ask. You know what their hesitancies are. You know what their limiting beliefs are. But going back, so when I was a freshman in high school, I was I was a terrible student throughout high school. But when I was a freshman, I had a teacher in English. Freshman English asked me to stay after. Her name was Miss Noble. And she said, Josh, what do you want to do after high school? And I said, well, I want to be a doctor. Because my mom, the year before, had gone through chemotherapy and cancer. So I really wanted to help people get healthy. And she laughed out loud when I told her that. And she said, Josh, with your GPA right now, you'd never get into med school. She said, my daughter had a 3.8 GPA at Ohio State. She barely got in. And she said, you know, you're doing terrible in this class. She gave me my paper back. She said, you got an F on this paper. You got a D minus in the class so far. She goes, you need to try harder. And that was it. But as a 14-year-old kid, like what I walked away with was, I'm not smart. That's, I think, the narrative I started having in my head. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later, my mom brought me to a doctor and they diagnosed me with ADHD. And, you know, the guy's talking about me like I'm not in the room. And I remember thinking to myself,
Good.
Well, not only am I not smart, I'm like medically not smart. Like there's maybe something wrong with me. Mm. And so throughout high school, I just stopped trying. I mean, I barely graduated. I graduated with a C- GPA. And the only reason I graduated is I knew my dad would just be so mad if I didn't at least graduate. And then I applied to colleges. I got rejected by all kinds of colleges. But one college that I wanted to go to sent me a letter back. And it said, well, it started off with, you're not in, essentially. But it said, if you come and do summer school and you average above a 3.0, we'll let you in. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to do this. So it's the University of Kentucky. So I lived in Ohio, went up, took summer class, and I said, I'm going to try. And the first class I had to take was English 101. Mm. And first big assignment was a paper. And I thought, again, I'm going to try. I tried really hard. And then I had the teacher, Miss Williams, and she said, Josh, would you stay after class? And I thought, oh no, not this again. here we go. And she said, hey, what's your major? And I said, I haven't picked a major. She said, well, I think you should consider being an English major or a journalism major because I think you're a really great writer. She said, you got the highest grade in the class and, you know, great job. And I walked out of there. And for me, it was like, I caused like a mindset transplant. Like I believed for 4 years, I was not smart. I wasn't capable. Like I might as well, you know, just try to barely get by. And then I had one teacher tell me, hey, you're good at something. And then in college, I got above a 3.0. I later, this recently went to Johns Hopkins University, got a 3.9 GPA, you know, built some big businesses. And all that being said, none of that to boast, but just to say, like, if I wouldn't have overcome this one single limiting belief, I wouldn't have even gone to college or become a doctor, done any of this. Yeah. So I just wanted to share with everybody, like most people have something.
That's right.
Like, and it could be about your relationships. It could be about yourself. It could be about other people. It could be about an industry. For instance, I guarantee there's a few people listening to this when we brought up the communication thing and they said to themselves, well, I'm just not a good communicator. You know, or I'm never going to be a good communicator. It's just not true. There are people who are amazing communicators now that were just terrible in the beginning. So all that being said, identify what are your biggest beliefs that are holding you back, write those down and become aware of those and think about what you should think, right? What would Warren Buffett think? How does he think about this? Like, I don't know that Warren Buffett or Charlie Munger were naturally like these great orators, communicators, whatever. I just think that they over time talked enough and they worked on it and they created a really great conversational. So, I mean, I loved watching clips of them, you know, doing their, you know, their quarterly, you know, quarterly meetings and breakdown, you know, to the shareholder. So all that being said.
Well, I love that. I love that challenge. I think everybody listening has something. And if, as you listen to Josh say that, if you felt like, no, I think I'm good, that should also be a trigger that you're probably unaware. And so if anything, there's an exercise of like, hey, if you can write stuff down, great. Like you are aware now that there's something to work on. If you think you're great, if you feel like you're a great communicator, but you don't have the business you want to have, like there's some piece there that's probably a blind spot that you should probably at least have two, maybe three that you're like, I know these are things that I stumble on because we all have them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this is one of the things I really dive into in the book and go through. Here's exactly how you shatter your limiting beliefs and grow from it. You know, and I had others too. I had limiting beliefs about myself. I wasn't smart, overcame that. Later on, I realized at one point I had a limiting belief around people. I went through a phase where it was like, it was really hard to get people to change. So I thought, gosh, people don't change. Well, that's a really bad thing to start thinking because if as a doctor, I don't think people are going to change their diets and get healthier and better, I'm not going to necessarily give it my full effort. And I realized this is a really bad belief for me to have. Wow. And I had to go shatter. And one of the ways I did it is I started thinking about, well, I changed. I started thinking about all the patients that radically changed and transformed and started reading books about people changing. So anyways, and people could have, like, we have a mutual friend, I'm thinking about him. And he told me one of his limiting beliefs is like, money doesn't grow on trees. You know, there's only so big a piece of the pie, you know, cause some, you know, and it all starts with childhood. You know, it tends to be your parents at some, or a teacher or coach or whatever. But okay. So the next one, awareness. Mm-hmm. I want to start off here, giving an example of, there's a great study and it's called the Batman study. Yeah. And so probably the greatest title of a study ever, but these psychologists took kids and they put them into three groups. And they had them go and do an activity of building and creating something. And they wanted to see the work ethic of these kids based on three different prompts, okay, on how much effort and success they would have at doing this thing. And the first group, they wanted to tie it to identity. And so the first group, they said, okay, we're going to have you go in and do this exercise and just, you know, give it your all. Okay, great. And then the kids would work for a little bit. And then they said, hey, when you're done, go and play. So then they would go and play. The second group, they did a practice called self-distancing. So they said, Johnny, hey, we want you to think about yourself in there. Are you giving it your all? Are you trying hard? That sort of thing. And so he went in there, and then that person worked about 16%. I want to say it was like 13 to 16% harder and longer by just becoming self-aware. That was the whole thing. They helped them become self-aware, these kids. I think these were six-year-olds. Actually, it was two groups, 6 years and eight-year-olds. And then they had a third group. And they said, hey, who is your favorite superhero or favorite character? It was Princess Jasmine. And then one of the boys was like, I'm Batman. And that's where they named the study from, of course. And so these kids did another like 10 to 13% better effort than even when they were self-aware, because they were aware of themselves of being even greater than what maybe they thought themselves to be. Wow. As Batman or the princess or the superhero. And this ties into some psychology of, it's called your future self, or building stuff around your identity of who you are, to where, you know, if you believed that you couldn't fail, or if you believed you were Warren Buffett, how would you approach the client, right? Like, would you approach the bigger client? Would you go and let people know you're the best if you believed you were him?
Yeah.
And the whole idea in these studies is, be that person now. Like, who could you become in 10 years? If you were your best you, could you be the Warren Buffett? Could you be the Kathy Wood? Could you be the Peter Thiel? Could you be the Ray Dalio? Probably my favorite. I love Ray Dalio. So anyways, like, could you be that person? Well, now start acting like that person now, you know, and it's not being inauthentic. It's being aware of who you could become and just being that person now. So I just wanted to say, like, and when you think about the people that are at the top 1% in their fields, okay? Like, when I think about somebody who's really mature spiritually, if any of us spend time around a pastor or a rabbi or a priest or anyone that's, there's this calmness about them. It's kind of hard to ruffle most pastors, priests, and rabbis. And because they're so spiritually mature, it's spiritual awareness. And there's a term used about some that are very far along spiritually aware, and we call them mystics. Everyone from a Gandhi to a Jesus to a St. Francis of Assisi to a Maimonides, very, very spiritually aware. But the same thing is true for health. The people that actually have the best health, the thing that they mostly have in common, most of them are very aware of their own body. I can eat this, or this bothers me, or that. Like, they're just aware of their body. And I would say the same thing to in anything in life. Like if you're going to have great relationships, now there's a whole area of study of this called EQ, emotional intelligence. Daniel Goleman wrote a great book on this. But emotional intelligence is being self-aware, others aware, and world aware. Like, so if you have a high level of awareness, that leads to success in relationships. And we all know people like this, right? That are very just not self-aware, not others aware. They'll say things, you're like, how could that person be so unaware of that?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just convicting for us to know. I mean, if you want to grow in any area, you got to have a high level of awareness. Is so important. And the last one is this. It really has to do with principles. And, you know, if I were to call somebody, say this person's unprincipled, if you would go look that up in the dictionary, it basically means they have no moral standards or guides.
Mm.
And if you say someone's unprincipled, it's really a knock on their character.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that tends to happen, I love this little, you know, this little, story. There were two men sitting on a bench, and one man looked and they were sitting on a bench because they were homeless. And one looked at the other and he said, how did you get here? He said, I didn't listen to anybody. And then he looked back at the other guy and said, well, how'd you get here? He said, I listened to everybody. So whether you listen to anybody or everybody, you're going to end up in a bad spot. You need to listen to the right people, the right person. Like, what do the top 1% of people do? So principles, I think, really is like, what are the guiding principles of your life? Like, for health, I have guiding principles. You know, Food is medicine. Eat real food. Spend a lot of time outdoors. Move as much as possible, right? There are certain things I know that are going to lead to better health. And of course, there's lots of principles and things like in the Bible, like you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great example. You know, the servant of all is, you know, the greatest of all is a servant of all. Like, so those are principles, life principles, but being very aware of like, what are my investing principles? What are the principles I'm going to operate under? Here's a crazy example of this. There is a study, this was out of Harvard, and they wanted to see why CEOs got fired.
Hmm.
Well, the number one reason CEOs get fired is due to ethical failures, 40%.
Whoa.
Whereas 35% were fired for poor performance.
Wow.
So, I mean, more people are failing due to character issues, poor character, being unprincipled, than they are actual, just not having the skill to actually perform. And so I think it's just really important for people to really think through, like, what are my life principles? What are those principles? And this is a good thing to do as a family. Like, what are our family principles? What are my health principles? What are my business principles that I'm going to operate under? And this is something I go through in the book. And I bring up, we really touch on finances here, because I'll give you an example. I was really blessed early on to meet people like, I had a mentor of mine, amazing Jewish man, who taught me some really good sound financial principles. He built a really successful clinic. And he told me, he's like, stay out of debt, you know, and, you know, invest in real estate early on, that sort of thing. And it was just such good advice. I'm just so grateful for it. And then I met Dave Ramsey, got some advice from him, met Jordan Rubin, got some great advice from him. And so it's like, well, what are some of these principles? Well, of course, you know, where Warren Buffett shares his, like, I love his one principle, which is, you know, when do you invest? When there's blood in the water, right? That's when you start going all in. But that's a principle, right? So anyways, operating by those principles. And that's one of the things you want to share, as we talked about the why and the who and the what and the how. The what and the how, in particular, those philosophies, those principles, sharing those with people so people understand those, I think can be helpful. But that's a big part of sort of the idea behind those principles. But again, here's what most people do. Most people are led by propaganda in the news. Like, what did Jim Cramer say? Who cares? I don't think he probably knows that much. I don't know much about Jim Cramer. My point is, like, who's more successful, Jim Cramer or Ray Dalio and Warren Buffett?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to listen to the media, the newspaper. This is crashing, the crypto guys. I'm listening to Warren Buffett and Ray Dalio if I want to be successful. And Warren Buffett, there's another, I love Warren Buffett. I read a lot on him. And another thing he said, hey, one person asked him how you're so successful. He's like, I just ignore all of the media hype. You know, and so I think that's another big thing. It's easy to get caught up in. So anyways, there's some.
Yeah, I think as we wrap it up, everybody go check out the book, Think This, Not That. It's not, we all need inputs. Like, we need information coming in, but we really need to discern that input. Like, are these people truly good at what they do? And I think what's tough about our business sometimes is that the sources have not been there. They haven't been in the trenches like an advisor. They're sharing ideas. And a lot of advisors either kind of cut it out because they're like, I'm comfortable where I am, and you're going to stall out. You'll be on the average path. Or you just consume so much that you're in this constant state of change or questioning. Yes. And then it's more you're measuring activity versus like quality. And so kind of as we close, what would you say to that?
Well, one, I mean, again, I brought up Warren Buffett a lot here, but I mean, Warren Buffett learned the principles of Benjamin Graham, learned some other things and tweaked them early on. And I don't know that he's done hardly anything different now. For the past
bigger 50, numbers.
Just bigger numbers. So yes, I absolutely agree.
Love that.
Yeah.
So brother, man, I'm glad you're here. Everybody check the book out. We'll have to have you on again to unpack it a little bit deeper.
Would love it. Well, thanks so much, Sten, for having me. And by the way, if everybody wants to I created a lot of free bonuses that go with the book. If you go into Amazon.com or any bookstore and get the book, and just if you go to Amazon, you'll get a little code once you order it. If you go to my website, joshax.com, and just plug that on the website, I created a lot of free bonuses. There's a free workbook. Nice. There is a mindset masterclass. There are these cards, bonus interviews with Dave Ramsey and others on there. So you'll get, it's hundreds of dollars worth of free gifts. If people go and get the book on Amazon and just plug in that code, they'll get all that here right now too, if they do that now. But man, thanks so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it. And you're a good friend. So thanks again, Sten.
Thanks, brother. We'll talk soon.